story, the Bible, we heard that God created the heavens and the earth. God is eternal. He's outside of time. This is one of his creations. We don't know how many he's already had. After all, he's been around forever. So the Bible tells us about this one. He made the oceans, he made the animals, and he made humans, and the humans flubbed up. But God's plan was not thwarted. He chose a people for his own, and he promised that he would come and be a savior through those people. You're going to see me reading because I promised that my part in this scripture would be between 14 and 17 minutes. If I shift off of this script, I will be giving you tangent stories all over the place because there are so many and they are so much fun. So I have to skip it, but here we go. Last week on God's story, God appointed Moses to lead the Hebrews out of Egypt. They took 2 years to wander over to the promised land. Joshua stuck close to Moses the whole time. Of the 12 spies who checked out the land, Joshua and Caleb were the two who said, "Whew, God's going to give us this land. Let's go." Well, the people were afraid, so God sent them back to the wilderness for 38 more years. That generation died out. Their clothes didn't wear out, so that means the next generation must have had an awful lot of hand-me-downs. But the Hebrews eventually reached the east side of the Jordan River. They defeated the kings who were there, and they captured all of those cities. 2.5 tribes of Israel settled there and claimed that land as theirs. Moses got to see the promised land, and he told Israel, "If you choose your own thing, then you are choosing death. If you choose God's way, then you are choosing life." And then Moses died. He was probably pretty happy he didn't have to listen to all those grumblers anymore. God continues to fulfill his plan, keep his promises, and raise up his people.
And we read from the first chapter of the book of Joshua. The Lord said to Joshua, Moses' assistant, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, into the land that I am giving to them, to the people of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given to you, just as I promised to Moses. Be strong and courageous, for you shall cause this people to inherit the land that I swore to their fathers to give them."
So you see, Dick's going to take a big chunk of this so I can keep to my time that I promised. Joshua tells the people, "Get ready. In 3 days, we're going into the land." He sends 2 spies to the land. Remember, 12 didn't work out very well the last time. And they came to Rahab for lodging. The king of Jericho hears that there are spies, and he sends men out to find them. Rahab hides them.
And from Joshua chapter 2, before the men lay down, she came up to them on the roof and said to the men,
"I know that the Lord has given you the land, and that the fear of you has fallen on us, and that all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did beyond the Jordan. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God, in the heavens and on the earth beneath." So, Rahab had repeated some of the words of the song that Miriam and Moses sang after the crossing of the Red Sea. Imagine how surprised those spies were. She asks the spies to save her and her family when Israel destroys Jericho. God is going to save the believers. When the king's men knock on her door, she tells them that the Hebrews have left. Go and catch them. And then she tells the spies how to safely escape. Meanwhile, back on the other side of the river, God tells Joshua how to cross the Jordan. The priests will take the Ark of the Covenant. They will step into the flooded river. It is harvest time, and the Jordan River floods every year. The flow of the river is going to stand up in a heap farther upstream. The people are going to follow 3,000 feet behind the ark until the priests stop mid-river. Then all of the people will pass on dry ground. One man from each tribe is going to have to take a huge stone on his shoulder and carry it out of the middle of the riverbed and stack it on the west side of the river. This pile is going to be a reminder for their children about the crossing. And Israel obeys. And so a new generation has their own water crossing story. Israel sets up camp at Gilgal. It's a little bit north and west of Jericho. And all of the males got circumcised. They didn't do it in the wilderness. Then they celebrate Passover. It's a bookend for the wanderings. Before they left, they had Passover, and then the crossing of the Red Sea. Then they had all that wilderness wandering, and now they had a water crossing and Passover. God just neatly packages things sometimes. It is harvest time, and the very next day, they ate the produce of the land, and the manna stopped.
From Joshua chapter 5, when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. And Joshua went and said to him, "Are you for us or for our adversaries?" And the man said, "No, but I am the commander of the army of the Lord, and now I have come." And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" And the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so.
That sounds familiar too. It is time to conquer the land. All 603,550 soldiers, the men of war, walked around Jericho once a day for 6 days, following the priests who were carrying the ark and other priests who were blowing seven trumpets the whole time. On the seventh day, they circled Jericho seven times, and then they stopped and shouted. The walls came down. The two spies found Rahab and her family, and they became a part of Israel. The entire city was destroyed, and its inhabitants were all killed. God used Israel to exact his righteous judgment on wicked people.
And from Joshua chapter 6, Joshua laid an oath on them at that time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord be the man who rises up and rebuilds this city, Jericho. At the cost of his firstborn shall he lay its foundation, and at the cost of his youngest shall he set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all the land.
And that curse was realized 350 years later. Meanwhile, God delivers up the cities and the kings of the land into Joshua's hand, as long as Israel seeks and obeys God's direction. They do flub up. They learn a lesson, and then they watch God clear the land for 7 years. During this time, God conquers the land with battles, hailstones. He stops the sun from moving for about 8 hours one day so that the warriors can fight in daylight. And he had the Canaanites fighting with each other to the death.
From Joshua chapters 11 and 13. Joshua made war for a long time with all those kings, for it was the Lord's doing to harden their hearts, that they should come against Israel in battle, in order that they should be devoted to destruction and should receive no mercy, but be destroyed, just as the Lord had commanded Moses. So Joshua took the whole land and gave it for an inheritance to Israel according to their tribal allotments, and the land had rest from war. Then the Lord said to Joshua, "You are old and advanced in years, and there remains very much land yet to possess. I myself will drive them out from before the people of Israel. Now, therefore, divide this land for an inheritance to the 9 tribes and the half-tribe of Manasseh."
So God had kept his promise. Joshua and Caleb received the land that God had promised to them from the first time that they saw it. These men were still as healthy and vigorous as they had been at the beginning of the wanderings. God kept them strong this whole time. The rest of the book of Joshua tells how the land was divided, how Israel kept many of the pagans alive as laborers rather than destroying them, how God provided cities and pasture land for the tribe of Levi, and cities of refuge for those who accidentally killed someone.
In Joshua chapter 22, not one word of all the good promises that the Lord had made to the house of Israel had failed. All came to pass.
And Joshua carved another set of the 10 commandments. He gathered all of Israel to that west side of the Jordan, and he read the entire law to them so that they would remember.
And in Joshua chapter 23, Joshua says, "Just as all the good things that the Lord your God promised concerning you have been fulfilled for you, so will the Lord bring upon you all the evil things until he has destroyed you from off this good land, if you transgress the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them. Then the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and you shall perish quickly from off the good land he has given to you. Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and faithfulness. Put away the gods that your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. And if it is evil in your eyes to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the old gods or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord."
Israel's soldiers from the tribes on the east side of the Jordan go home with their families. There they erect an altar like the one at Shiloh, and it almost started a civil war. The people on the west couldn't understand what they were going to do with another altar when God had told them to worship in the new promised land. Well, the people in the east wanted to make sure that the future generations on both sides of the Jordan knew that the people on the east side were also a part of Israel. They were doing what was good in their own eyes. Then Joshua died at 110 years old.
So we finish the story of Joshua from chapter 24. Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua and had known all the work that the Lord did for Israel. And we move on to the book of Judges in chapter 2. Now the Lord said to Israel, "I brought you up from Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give your fathers. And I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars. But you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare to you." Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them, bowing down to them. They did not drop any of the practices or their stubborn ways.
So God placed 12 judges in different cities in Israel over the next many years. Othniel was the first. He was the younger brother of Caleb. He defeated the king of Mesopotamia who tried to conquer Israel just on the west side of the Jordan. Ehud was another judge. He defeated King Eglon. He was from Moab, and he tried to rebuild Jericho. Well, he only sort of did it. It was a very puny place with no walls at the time. Ehud and the Israelites had to take tribute to the king, and as they were returning home, Judge Ehud decided to go back to the king's palace. He went in, and he thrust an 18-inch sword and the hilt into the king's gut. Eglon was one really fat guy. Ehud locked the door, and he left. The king's servants thought that the king was in the bathroom, and so they left him alone. And after quite a while, they started getting nervous, so they went to check on him. And of course, he was dead. And then Israel went in and defeated his entire army. Shamgar was a non-Israelite judge. He killed 600 Philistines. Deborah, a prophetess, defeated King Jabin and Commander Sisera of Canaan. Notice all the different peoples that God is conquering. Deborah summoned Barak, the head of her army, to go to battle. And he said, well, I won't go unless you go with me. And she said, well, I'll go with you, but because of your fear, a woman is going to kill the commander Sisera. Israel kills the king. They kill 10,000 soldiers, but Sisera escapes the battle. A female descendant of Moses' father-in-law, and here they name her Jael, she came out of her tent to call Sisera into safety. She gave him warm milk and put him to sleep under a rug, and then she took a tent spike and drove it through his skull right into the ground. Nomadic women, they're kind of tough. Meanwhile, Deborah and Barak then sing a new song. Gideon was another judge. The nation of Midian raided Israel every year at harvest time and took all their food. Every year, the people hid in caves. They lived, but they were very hungry for 7 years in a row. The angel of the Lord came while Gideon was beating out wheat in a wine press, trying to hide it. And the angel said, "The Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor." Gideon responded,
"Doesn't look like I am, does it?"
The Lord replied, "Go in your might and save Israel from Midian. Do I not send you?"
"But I'm no one."
"I will be with you."
"Show me a sign and stay until I return with a gift."
"I will stay." So Gideon prepared a goat and cakes, and the Lord said, "Put them on this rock and pour broth over them." So Gideon did. And then the Lord touched the food with his staff. Fire consumed all of it, and he vanished. Gideon fears he is going to die because he saw God. God says, "You won't die." He tells Gideon to tear down his dad's pagan altar and build one to God. Gideon does it at night because he's afraid, and he offers a bull on it as God had asked him to do. Gideon is still afraid, so he asks God for more signs. God keeps a fleece wet one night on dry ground and dry the next night on wet ground. Gideon gathers 22,000 men to fight Midian. God says it's too many, and he dismisses all of those who are afraid. 10,000 are left. It's still too many. So he dismisses all of those who kneel down at the river to drink, and he keeps only those who have lifted their hand to their mouth to drink water. 300 men are left, and God says this is just right. They encircle the camp, each one with a trumpet and a pot with a hidden torch inside. They crash the pots, the fire is glowing, and they yell. The Midianites are so terrified that 120,000 of them kill each other in panic. 15,000 run away, but they get caught and they are killed with their kings. Israel, they're so excited they ask Gideon to rule over them.
But in Judges 8, Gideon says, I will not rule over you, and my son will not rule over you. The Lord will rule over you.
And so God received the glory that is due to him. The other judges, Tola, son of Pua, son of Dodo. I really wanted to read those words. He judged Israel for 23 years and then he died. Jair, a rich guy, judged for 22 years. Abdon, another rich guy with 40 sons, judged for a while. And Ibzan, who had 30 sons and 30 daughters, was a judge. And then there was Jephthah. This man was a mighty warrior. He challenged the king of the Ammonites and sent messengers to him to give him a history lesson in order to avert a war. And the history ends with these words.
From Judges 11, so then the Lord, the God of Israel, dispossessed the Amorites from before the people Israel. And are you to take possession of them? Will you not possess what Chemosh, your God, has given you to possess? And all that the Lord our God has dispossessed before us, we will possess. I therefore have not sinned against you, and you do me wrong by making war on me. The Lord, the judge, decide this day between the people of Israel and the people of Ammon. But the king of the Ammonites did not listen to the words of Jephthah. Then the spirit of the Lord was upon Jephthah, and he passed through the land of the Ammonites. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will give the Ammonites unto my hand, and then whatever comes from the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering.
Well, God did give the Ammonites into his hand. And when Jephthah got home, he was greeted by his daughter, his only child, and he kept his vow. And Jesus tells us to take very seriously the idea of making a vow. Samson is the last judge listed. Now, the Philistines oppressed Israel for 40 years. Manoah and his wife had no children. God appeared to the wife, and he told her she would conceive and have a son. She, while pregnant, should drink no wine and eat nothing unclean. And her son, for his whole life, should drink no wine, eat nothing unclean, and never cut his hair. Well, she told her husband. And he asked God to send that same messenger to him. Manoah asked the angel of the Lord what their son's manner of life and mission would be. And God said,
let your wife do as I told her.
Manoah and his wife prepared food, and God said,
offer it up to God.
As they watched, the offering went up in flames, and God went with it. Then Manoah knew that it was God, and he said, oh, wife, we are going to die. We saw God. And she said, if the Lord had meant to kill us, he would not have accepted a burnt offering and a grain offering at our hands or show us these things. Kind of sounds like a wife, doesn't it? Well, God uses Samson, an arrogant, impetuous Nazirite, to pester and kill the Philistines time and time again. You can read about his first wife, the lion and the honey, Delilah, and his final act against the Philistines. Here he finally asks God to give him strength one last time. And Samson wraps one hand around each of the central pillars in a Philistine mansion. And he bows down, bringing the pillars and the entire mansion down on himself and on all of the Philistine leaders of that day. So he finally got to honor God in one of his actions. Well, Judges closes with two stories of the Israelites doing whatever they thought was good. Stealing from their parents, making idols, acting like priests, putting concubines outside to be violated to save themselves, cutting one up to send her parts throughout Israel to tell Israel that they are evil, capturing virgins so an evil tribe won't die out, and several internal wars. All of it like primetime cable stuff. But there is one good story during the time of Judges. That's the book of Ruth. During a famine in Israel, a man, his wife, and their two sons move to Moab. It's on the east side of the Jordan River, south of where the Israelites lived. The sons marry Moabite women. Dad dies. 10 years later, the sons die. And the mom is devastated, and she renames herself Naomi. And she decides to return to Israel. The daughters-in-law, they want to go too. But Naomi said, that is not a life for you. And she convinces Orpah to stay. But Ruth is very persistent. And she says,
in Ruth chapter 1,
do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. And so they move to Bethlehem, which is Naomi's husband's hometown. And Ruth gleans grain for them outside of Bethlehem.
And the story continues in Ruth chapter 2. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, the Lord be with you. And they answered, the Lord bless you. Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, whose young woman is this? And the servant answered, she is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi. And she said,
please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers.
So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest. And then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn.
Now Naomi knows that Boaz is a kinsman redeemer. That is a relative of her husband who can marry Ruth and raise her kids for the original family. She tells Ruth how to request being his wife, and Ruth obeys. Boaz is impressed.
And he said, may you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. And it is true that I am a redeemer. Yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good. Let him do it. But if he is not willing, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. So lie down until morning.
So Boaz redeems Ruth and marries her. They have children. The sons inherit the property of Naomi's husband in Bethlehem. They have kids who have kids, and Ruth becomes the great-grandma of King David. Israel spent years disobeying God. They desperately need a king because they cannot follow one that they cannot see. In the meantime, God grafted non-Israelites into the nation of Israel to be his children. And we belong to the group of souls. May we, unlike the Israelites of old, faithfully follow our Lord. Amen.